What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
Hey, kids, let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. From the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high-heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I never seen her better stew.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. The music for this episode, I was on a nice two-day layover in Brussels, Belgium, and there were some street performers, three guys on a corner, and I enjoyed it, so that's the music for this episode. And in this episode, we've got a wide range of stories. We've got a dwarf story, we've got an astronaut story, we've got a fighter pilot story, lots of flight attendant stories in there. And then at the end of the episode, a very touching story about a flying eye hospital. Let's get on with the show.
There's a lady on my flight one time, and we're going to London, and the smoke alarm was going off.
Oh, yeah.
And the purser said, because you're a female, I know it's a woman in there. You go in there.
In the bathroom.
Yeah, into the bathroom. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. No,
you like that too. No.
So we unlocked the door in our special flight attendant way.
Right.
And there's a little old woman sitting on the toilet, and she's got a cigarette, and she's going, I only took two puffs.
What did she say?
I only took two puffs.
All right, this must have been the mid-90s. I was the coordinator on an L-1011. We were going from Atlanta to San Juan, Puerto Rico, obviously. And about halfway through the flight, I was walking through C-Zone, and this lady stops me. And she's like, sir, I think the captain's trying to poison me. And, you know, he's poisoned my food. He's, poisoning me. Poison the air in the cabin. Well, of course, stifling my laugh, I just kind of reassured her that that was not the case and everything is fine. You know, you ate your food and you're doing well. Everyone's living on the plane. Just basically tried to reassure her. And when we got to San Juan, I kind of told the red coat who met the flight. He said, "Oh, yeah, we have her on the flight every week, so it's no big deal. She does that every week." So
every captain's out to get her?
Apparently, but she. You know, foils them all by going on living and ordering pizza and 25C.
So I've been doing this podcast for a long time, and you know, there's themes. You know, there's a lot of puking stories. Lately, there's a whole bunch of Ambien people taking their clothes off stories. That's been a big trend. But the one trend I think is really weird is that I think in the last year, I've had four stories where passengers have thought that a crew member, either a flight attendant or a pilot, was poisoning them. Oh, where in the world is this coming from? How in the world can there be so many stories about that? I mean, why would any passenger think a crew member would want to poison them? I mean, what's the upside for us? You know, like, do we get your insurance money? What, just so we can serve one less passenger? Like, I don't understand where the thinking behind the crazy thoughts that a crew member could be poisoning you comes from. So I was boarding an airplane, I was like holding a tray of champagne and orange juice in business class. I was on one aisle, and on the other aisle, I could see a nicely dressed woman say to the other flight attendant on the other aisle, you know, I'm too short to put my bag in the overhead bin. Will you put it up for me? And I'm looking, I notice everything, but I'm looking at this thinking, the flight attendant she's asking to put her bag in the overhead bin is shorter than she is. so that argument is absolutely no good. And so we get to the galley with the other flight attendant. I'm like, you're shorter than she was. And she's saying she's too short to put her bag in the overhead bin. And the other flight attendant's just, you know, rolling her eyes. Because so often you want to say something, but you don't. Because, you know, we're in the public service job. And we're there to make the customers happy. So you're not going to say, hey, lady, I'm shorter than you. So put your own darn bag up in the overhead bin. But this next story. I love this next story. It's from the Dr. Drew podcast. He, you know, the Dr. Drew from Loveline and Adam Carolla. He's all over. He's got his own shows on HLN. Anyway, he's got his own podcast now, and I really enjoy it. And one of his episodes, I think it's episode 10 of the Dr. Drew podcast, he had on Brad Williams, who is a really funny comedian who is a person of short stature. He has dwarfism. And, this is a clip that I loved about him and his overhead bin experiences. Brad Williams, you can find him at bradwilliamscomedy.com if you want tour dates or whatever. He's really good.
It's difficult. That, like, the road trumps dwarfism in terms of being a difficulty for relationships.
Yeah.
Because you're gone 3-4 days a week, home 3-4 days a week, and then the girl will eventually say, like, but I want you to spend more time with me. It's like, yeah, but I want to pay for my mortgage.
Right. And travel is enough of a challenge for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have special – this is like my own personal question.
Yeah, it's fine.
Because I've traveled a bunch. And it drives me insane.
Yeah.
I would imagine if I had any issue more I had to deal with, I think I'd jump off a cliff.
You know what? I don't really have issues. I mean, whenever I board the plane, they always ask me if I need help getting my bag up in the overhead storage bin. I don't. I have this ingenious thing where I throw down both armrests, I hop on top of the armrests, reach down, grab my bag, and in really just one swoop, just fling it up into the overhead storage bin.
Oh, I did video of this.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
It's a commercial.
Every time I do it,
it's like a slow clap.
Yeah, just like, yeah! Flight attendants are always like, oh, well, I was not expecting that. Because then you have other people on the flight feeling guilty, like the 22-year-old blonde. Just like, I need help with my bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? Because the midget just did it by himself.
And you guys, yeah, look. I think part of the reason our control room is laughing is you hear the shit that Corolla complains about all the time traveling, right?
Well, Brad doesn't complain.
See what I'm saying?
But then I've hung out with Adam enough where I know he would come back with, well, but every seat is a first class seat to this guy. He's got plenty of room. Which, by the way, true.
It's a Dr. Drew podcast, and I'm here with Brad Williams, and stunningly, the great Adam Corolla just walked in the room casually.
How are you, sir?
With a smirk on his face.
That's it.
Your name came up just 10 minutes ago. Also, we were talking about traveling. I was saying, geez, traveling is already tough enough. Do you, what's it like to travel with a little extra, a little extra something you got to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
And he proceeded to tell a story about how he's able to put his shit in the overhead bin by basically doing like a half gainer off the
Oh,
chair.
Really?
Yeah.
I never thought about the overhead bin.
Yeah, I just throw two armrests down, hop on, grab my bag, and in one motion just throw it up in the overhead bin.
Oh, yeah, you do like it's the Highland Games for little people.
Destroying the caber.
Yeah. Caber. So nerdy of you to know that. But listen, as I said, every seat is first class.
What did
Brad.
I say? What every did seat. I say his comeback was going to be?
Every seat. No, but seriously.
I had it.
Yes. As you said.
Last time I flew, I was up in the back, the very back. The seat did not recline. Because
right.
It's the very back one, which mm-hmm. should be outlawed by design, or sure. you should get another $20 off your ticket or whatever it is. Because yeah. you're sitting in the non-reclined seat, and what you don't realize, there's a ballet of reclining going on, which is if your seat is reclined and then the guy behind you reclines his seat, it's like slow motion stupid Southwest dominoes yeah. where you'd see them all go back. Now
And everyone now has apparently the same amount of space.
Equal right.
space,
the guy yeah. in front of you, if he reclines and you can't recline, you're just giving him a shave. I mean, like, literally putting a hot towel on his face, smoking a cigar. We're talking about the Brooklyn Dodgers. Yeah. I said, that 22 Scudero.
Jackie Robinson looks like he's going to be a good player.
One talented Negro. Not that I'm for it or anything. But so now he's reclined. But I'm saying Brad doesn't have that.
Well, but see, no.
My knees are pressed against the seat in front of me the entire
Well, here's what I have. I have the fact that when my legs just dangle, because they do, they don't touch the ground in the seats, they fall asleep. So I have to shove them up against the seat in front of me to make sure they don't fall asleep.
So don't sit in front of a dwarf.
Yeah,
that's what that means.
Kicks the seat in front of me. The guy stands up like, I'm going to mess you up, then sees me and goes, oh, God beat me to it.
Has anybody ever given you shit about that?
It's happened so many times where they turn around like about to and then see me and like, this is probably going to look bad.
So this flight attendant was telling me that there was this well-dressed, very Southern, really put together. You know, like, have you ever seen those people that are wearing, like, matching outfits? It's like an ivory coat, an ivory hat, ivory pants, ivory shoes. I mean, really putting it on thick. And she said that this woman called her over and said, what's your name? And she said, Brenda. And she said, listen, Brenda. If you bring me a gin and tonic, I'll write you a letter. But if you bring me a double, I'll make your letter better. If you bring me a double, I'll make your letter better.
In 1982, I was flying the F4 Phantom out of Keflavik, Iceland.
F4 Phantom.
Yes. Yeah, we did the air defense mission. Our job was to defend the little island of Iceland from the Russians. This is back in the Cold War. Yeah, and they would occasionally make faint attacks on Russia, or on Keflavik or Reykjavik with their bombers. So they had three different types of bombers. Bears, bisons, and badgers were the code names for them.
Can I say those again? Bears?
A bear, or a bison, or a badger were the three bombers they had. Yeah. All their bombers, we would give them the letter B, so it made it easier for us to remember. So we were scrambled to intercept a formation of...
Badgers, bison, and bears?
Yes, bears, badgers, and bisons. Oh my. No, I have to back up a little bit. This was the very soon months after, and I might not have the dates just right, when the Russians shot down a Korean Airlines airliner. Near Korea, and so there's a lot of tension going on over that. And so anyway, we were scrambled to intercept these bear aircraft. They were flying about 30,000 feet. They were huge aircraft, four engines on each wing with counter-rotating props, turbine props. So they were making their run towards Iceland, and usually what would happen is we'd show up and we'd kind of get in front of them and they'd turn and go off somewhere. We didn't actually come fisticuffs or engage with them. But on this occasion, and this had never happened to me before, and I'd been on several intercepts prior to this, they did lock me up with their with their 30 millimeter, or I forget what the exact is, but their guns. As I came up behind the aircraft, my radar homing and warning went off in my little headset and my little scope lit up. So we were concerned about that. It's a little bit scary. You know, I didn't want to get shot at, so we backed off. But we stayed with them, and then they went and went on their merry way. So it just so happened that my backseater was a major, and it was last flight in the F-4 in Keflavik. So that's kind of a big occasion, you know, where they shoot the water and do stuff like that. So we taxied in to the alert facility. And we shut down our engines, And he gets out first, and everybody's clapping and cheering. And they pop open a bottle of champagne and hand it to him. And so he's getting all the glory. And I kind of sauntered out a little bit after him. You climb down. The cockpit's pretty high. And the crew chief has a funny look, and he's looking at me. And he looks at the airplane, looks at me, looks at the airplane. And I look, and my left forward missile was missing. So what we carried four AIM-7 their radar-guided missiles. And we have two on each side along the fuselage. And my left forward one was gone. So the immediate conclusion they came to was that I had fired it.
I was going
to
say, you shot it.
Yeah.
But what happened? Yeah.
Well, you know, my boss came up and he said, what happened? And I said, I don't know. It must have just fallen off. I didn't push that button. So it just popped, just blew. Remember the space story?
Champagne.
It just blew.
You didn't get the champagne reception.
Well, not right away. So it took a while. They had to do an investigation, and they were able to figure out within not too long, you know, within 30 minutes or so, that it had not fired off. It had indeed fallen off.
Wow.
You know, so I didn't get in trouble. Probably not. Yeah. Yeah. If we were just sitting there and it fell off, maybe, but not so much. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So then the concern just became, well, where did it fall off?
Yeah.
In the ocean or over the land?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if we ever spoke to the Icelandic authorities about it. They did do a pretty good look-see.
Maybe it's like a barrier reef now.
Yeah, right. It probably is.
Some nice species
in there. So anyway,
well,
that's my.
You're fighting with bears and badgers and
bisons.
Bisons.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a really interesting thing on the internet recently. It was another flight attendant, and I guess it was a blog post, but they were talking about how, I don't know if they were talking about my airline, but the odds are the same. My airline just hired 400. Flight attendants. And guess how many applications they got? 50,000. 50,000 applications for 400 jobs. So in this internet blog post, this flight attendant was saying, it's easier, your odds are better, the numbers are better for you to get into Harvard than to become a flight attendant. So I'm not complaining about anything, because I'd have a hard time getting into Harvard. I'm really glad I'm not applying with those types of odds. 50,000 applications for 400 jobs. Wow.
I was on a DC-9, and I was getting tired of, on the DC-9, it's so crowded.
Yeah.
And people were coming on, and I was getting hit by backpacks and
yeah.
and things. And I was getting kind of tired of getting hit by these backpacks, so I just pushed this guy.
You did?
I pushed him. And he turns around, and it was Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, you pushed Harry Connick Jr.?
Yeah, and he's like, did you just push me? And I said, no, you bounced off that cockpit door. That's what it was.
Yeah. Was he nice after that?
He was really nice. He laughed.
I bet you don't push many celebrities.
And not anymore.
Have you ever again?
No. Just flight attendants. No, not even.
So I was talking to one of my sisters recently, and she said, how come you never tell the stories that make you look bad on the podcast? And I'm thinking, I do. And then she reminded me of a few stories that she loves because I did really stupid things. We had a ping pong table at one point when we were growing up, and I was kind of good at ping pong. And I think I had just beaten her in a game of ping pong. So I was fanning myself with the ping pong paddle. Like, you know, I'm so good at ping pong. Look at me. I'm fanning myself. And just then I smacked myself in the face with the paddle. So as I was acting pompous with the ping pong paddle, I smacked myself right across the face. She loves that one. And the other one she loves is one time my mother, my sister and I were shopping for shoes at it was either Payless or one of those type shoe stores where they're, you know, a whole bunch of boxes and you go around and just try the things on yourself. You don't have to ask anybody to go get them. You know, a low cost shoe store. I was trying on shoes, and I guess I wasn't paying attention, and I stuck my shoes back into one of the boxes, you know, along the wall. Kept going around trying on shoes, and then I couldn't find my shoes. We had to go around. We had to scour the stores looking for the shoes that I had worn in there because they were now lost in a sea of new shoes. She loves that one.
Oh, walked into a gentleman had an accident, went to the emergency room. As next of kin, his wife showed up as well as his girlfriend.
Oh.
Made for an interesting conversation.
Was it heated? Were there tears?
It was difficult.
Do you just have to remain calm in that situation, or what do you do?
Tried to keep him separated. I think he was better off with the accident.
Why were they both there?
Well, hypothetically, probably the police called the wife, and he probably called the girlfriend.
So back in the day, we used to serve in coach this light breakfast snack, and it was like a bagel and cream cheese, and it was shrink wrapped onto this little plastic plate. A unknowledgeable passenger trying to be PC there, an unknowledgeable passenger complained to one of the flight attendants, and they were like, my donut is stale. It's all hard. Feel how hard this donut is. And she's like, it's not a donut. It's a bagel. And the person was like, yeah, but my donut's stale.
Hey, I got married at 49, thinking I would never get married, you know, so I did. And I married a pilot, and we got married on a layover, so to speak, in Maui. And I was just on top of the world. And after 7 days, we're coming home, my husband's flying the flight, I'm sitting in the back. He comes back before takeoff and recognizes the guy sitting next to me, you know, and I don't know who the guy next to me is. I know he works for... So I'm on top of the world. I go on and on about my life. I talk about how I have 6 motorcycles, how I ride motorcycles. I have 6 dogs. I live on top of a mountain. I got everything going on. I was bragging.
6 motorcycles and 6 dogs.
Yeah, I was bragging, going on and on about myself. And I pictured this guy, this pilot, I pictured his wife at home with her bunny slippers on, you know, kicked back. So I was bragging.
Yeah.
I was bragging.
Yeah.
So I just lean over after about 30 minutes of going on, and I say, now what does your wife do? And I said, what does your little wife do? And he said, she's an astronaut. She was Captain Eileen Wright, I think is her name, and she's captain of the space shuttle at the time. So it was like... The ego, you know, it was good for me.
Yeah.
I just screamed out Jack Daniels, and the flight attendants immediately brought me a drink. And then I just had an ego check there. And that was it.
A little bubble burst.
It was a big bubble burst, to say the least.
Well, I'm about to go on a little trip. I'm going to the Caribbean. I'm excited. Hopefully, next episode, there'll be some good stories from there. Who knows? I'm always hoping for stories. Hoping something goes a little crazy so I could talk about it on the podcast. And if you would like to support the podcast, if you like the show, you could do me a huge favor by just going to my website before you're going to buy something on Amazon. Because if you click through my website, bettingthesky.com, I get a little percentage. It doesn't cost you anymore. And you support the show. It's kind of like good all around. Okay, so you're a pilot.
Yes, and I was based in Portland, Oregon on the L-1011, and we flew to Narita and Seoul and Taipei and Bangkok. That's what we did.
That's nice.
That's all we did. But one of my friends, a captain out there, I was a co-pilot. I remember he was at my wedding. He drove an old 69 Oldsmobile, and he had a house full of kids and a wife. Well, unbeknownst to his wife, he also had a Korean mistress.
Oh. It's easier to keep that
Because of the distance.
Yes, yeah, because, you know, yeah. You go on 7-day trips and stuff like that. So, but anyway, he's in his late 50s and he has a heart attack. And so he's on his supposed deathbed in the hospital with the wife, and the Korean girlfriend shows up.
Yeah.
So the wife said, "I'm going to divorce you," and you know, that's the. She walked out the room, and she indeed.
As he was dying.
Yes. Although he recovered, he recovered, and much to his credit, he did marry the Korean girlfriend.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Of course, I shouldn't say that. That'd be sort of ethnic. Well, it's just sort of a common occurrence that the gals in certain countries over there were always on the lookout for a guy to grab, and before you knew it, they were married, their whole family was in the U.S. and they were U.S. citizens.
Yeah,
so you see that happened quite often.
Worked out for her.
It worked out for her.
So I've been a flight attendant for a long time, and one of the things about being a flight attendant is you see a lot of people pass out. I think more than most jobs. I think it's safe to say we see more people pass out than in most jobs. So you get to know the look, and you can just tell when somebody's going down. It's a weird thing. Anyway, I'm walking home. I had been walking at the beach. I had a backpack on, and I was about a half a block from an old, I guess I can say, old man on a bike. And I could see him sort of, it looked like he was weaving on the bike, and I thought, oh, he's going down. This is before he's still on the bike, and I'm thinking, oh. So I already had my backpack almost off, getting my phone out, because I'm thinking he's going to fall. I'm still not anywhere near him. So sure enough, he falls off the bike and hits his head on a tree and is like bleeding out his ear. Luckily, another couple was closer to him, and they got to him before I did, and were already kind of like, you know, asking him if he was okay. And I already had the phone out, and they're like, "Should we call 911?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, I mean, he's bleeding out of his ear." And so I called 911, and it was just sort of, he ended up, you know, they took good care of him. I asked him what year it was, and he was like, 1913. It's not funny. I mean, he was 84. Gotta give him credit for biking. But it's so nice to live in a society where there's so many, you know, contingencies ready for something that happened, because literally it was before he even fell off the bike, before I had my phone out to call 911. But the time from when he was on the bike until there was medical attention there wasn't even 5 minutes. I mean, that's pretty darn good, you know. It's just nice to have society that just works so well. And it is weird being in a job where, you know, you can tell, ooh, he's going down.
We're now going to Jack McHale, who is the former president and CEO of Orbis. And who is now the MD-10 program director. Jack, can you tell us a little bit about what Orbis does?
Preventing and treating global blindness through capacity building. In the developed world, ophthalmologists have the latest techniques, the latest equipment. Unfortunately, there's 39 million blind people in the world, and 90% of them live in the developing world. And 80% of those don't have to be blind. So there's almost 32 million people around the globe that don't have to be blind if they had access to or could afford eye care. And Orbis is trying to attack this travesty. We do it by building capacity. We have a flying eye hospital that flies around the world to Africa, Asia, Middle East. What we do is we have a 2 to 3 week mission in country. We have volunteer faculty from the U.S., the U.K., India, China, who go on these missions, give up a week or two of their time to train local surgeons and medical personnel on the treatment of various eye disease to help eradicate this terrible blight of global blindness.
Now, the flying hospital is very novel. You started off many years ago with a DC-8.
Yes, sir.
And now you're using an MD-10.
Well, we started with a DC-8 that was donated by United. And the airplane went in service in 1982. For 10 years, the DC-8 flew around the world, transferring these skills. In the late 80s, the airplane was slightly long in the tooth, and quite frankly, the fuselage diameter didn't lend itself to a hospital environment, because essentially what we have, since we're a capacity building and training organization, the front of the airplane is actually a classroom. The center of the airplane is an operating theater with a recovery room. The DC-8 was so narrow you had to actually leave through the front left number 2 door to the number 4 aft door to go from one end to the other. So in the late 80s, understanding that they'd have to sunset this DC-8, Orbis reached out to Fred Smith at FedEx and said, gee, you're one of the largest DC-10 operators in the world. We are doctors and surgeons and philanthropists. We don't have any expertise in buying airplanes. Could you source and do the contract for a new Flying Eye Hospital platform? So the FedEx team actually sourced the airplane, did the contract, and the airplane went into mod in 1989 and came out in 1992 as the current Flying Eye Hospital. This is a completely outfitted surgical suite. Behind that we have what's called substerile, and then a recovery room, all housed in the fuselage of a DC-10. It's really a remarkable machine and quite an accomplishment when you try and adhere to and meld and satisfy the requirements of the Joint Commission, JCO for medical, and the FAA.
So when you fly into these out-of-the-way places with a DC-10, it's going to be quite hard to find a runway to handle it, sure.
Well, the DC-10, our airplane's relatively light because we don't have 345 seats. We do have some fairly heavy medical equipment. The airplane's self-sustaining, so we have generators and AC units that we carry in the belly to be self-sufficient when we go into remote locations. But by virtue of the size of the airplane, they're not super remote. I mean, we don't...
Let's talk about the airplane for a little bit. Who crews the airplane?
FedEx pilots. Well, we have an asterisk. When Orbis started, it was the United DCA. United pilots volunteered. So they set the precedent. So the missions that were flown on the original Flying Eye Hospital DC-8 were all flown by United volunteer pilots who gave up their time, took vacation, flew to these less than exotic destinations to give something back. When the DC-10 came on board, there were three major DC-10 carriers in the States: United, American, and FedEx. United was sunsetting their fleet of DC-10s, migrating it, ironically, to FedEx. So for a period of time, there was a nice, healthy mix of United pilots and FedEx pilots. And then as United shed the airplanes and the pilot base shrunk, the United pilots became retired pilots, not the line pilots, with FedEx management line pilots. And I think we have 9 remaining United retired pilots, all these many years later, augmenting the FedEx volunteer pilots.
When you fly out there, you take mechanics with you?
We have 2 mechanics fly on the airplane. They're part of the staff. We have 22 people on the airplane. So we rely on the aviation. FedEx is phenomenal. FedEx gives us technical engineering support, parts. They pay for the C-check. They've actually donated. We're going to sunset the current Flying Eye Hospital, the DC-10, because to continue the pilot story, so United eventually got out of the 10 business, retired United pilots, augmented FedEx. FedEx is now out of the DC-10 business, so our Flying Eye Hospital is an orphan. All of the FedEx pilots are now becoming MD-10, MD-11 pilots. So FedEx, in a very generous loan, donated an MD-10 to Orbis for the new Flying Eye Hospital. It's an MD-10 Series 30. It has a large cargo door. It's a lot younger than the current Flying Eye Hospital, which was the second one ever built. It's a Series 30, not a Series 10, so we can fly over tech stops that we have to fly with the current airplane. So it saves us time and fuel. So now the challenge is to take a FedEx freighter with a wonderful cockpit and the ability to draw on their crew base and their technical expertise and build a hospital in it and a classroom in a freighter.
When will the MD-10 Flying Hospital be ready, do you think?
End of next year.
And you'll continue to do the good work?
Yeah, for 20 more.
Thank you so much.
No, my pleasure.
that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with the Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel the world together. Thanks. Bye.
She'll tell you where she's been and tell you where she's going. You'll have some fun, so why not come along? Seatbelts are fastened for takeoff and the signal is strong. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen her better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.